Okay, so I wanted to touch into a little bit more of a refinement of this equanimity practice, because it is quite a subtle state. It can have some challenges to it. And in the traditional teachings on the Brahmaviharas, each of the qualities has what's known as a near enemy and a far enemy. And the near enemy is something that may seem like it's in the territory of the actual state, but it's just a little bit off in some way. Whereas the far enemy is really its opposite. And sometimes that will show up too. As I've been saying, we can sit down to cultivate kindness and find ourselves seething with anger and resentment. That's an example of the far enemy invading the practice. So with equanimity, the far enemies are greed and grief. So any form of wanting or not wanting that pulls us out of that balanced place. And they're pretty easy to recognize usually because they're unpleasant, stressful. So we can experience the agitation of greed or the pain of grief. And it's a wake-up call. Oh, I'm out of balance here. I've lost the equanimity. I need to take care of those obstacles in order to come back to balance. The near enemy of equanimity is indifference. And that's much harder to see because, like equanimity itself, it can be quite subtle and it's not so unpleasant. In fact, it can even be pleasant because we don't care. Whatever, you know, it's there can be a sort of a false ease with that indifference. And sometimes we can unconsciously cultivate a false kind of equanimity as a way of trying to escape from painful emotions. And I know there have been times in my own practice when I've tried to convince myself that I was being equanimous when really I was just disconnected and numbing out and trying to up-level it into something that looked more Buddhist or what I thought was supposed to be Buddhist. And this can become a kind of a default setting, one that the psychologist, Buddhist psychologist John Wellwood refers to as spiritual bypassing. Some of you may know of that term, but it's it comes out of his own experience of living in different spiritual communities and seeing how common it was for people to try and, as I say, sort of up-level where they were to get away from what they didn't like about themselves. So I'd like to read you a little bit of what he says about that. He says, spiritual bypassing is a term I coined to describe a process I saw happening in the Buddhist community I was in, and also in myself. Although most of us were sincerely trying to work on ourselves, I noticed a widespread tendency to use spiritual ideas and practices to sidestep or avoid feeling unresolved emotional issues, psychological wounds, and unfinished developmental tasks. Meditation is also frequently used to avoid uncomfortable feelings and unresolved life situations. For those in denial about their personal feelings or wounds, meditation practice can reinforce a tendency towards coldness, disengagement, or interpersonal distance. They are at a loss when it comes to relating directly to their emotions or expressing themselves personally in a transparent way. It can be quite threatening when those of us on a spiritual path have to face our woundedness, our emotional dependency, or our primal need for love. So that's quite a challenging statement because many of us are drawn to spiritual practice out of some misunderstanding of what it might do for us. And I know in my own practice early on, I had this unconscious kind of dualistic model where down here was messy psychological relationship, work life, blah kind of stuff. And up here was something called nibbana and freedom and emptiness, and I thought the point was to get away from here up to here as fast as possible and then hang out there. And it was quite a long time before I saw that split and started to understand that actually it's about folding in both ends of that practice. And as I said earlier, being free anywhere along that spectrum, so that's what I'm calling full spectrum practice. Because if we're only free over here and all the rest of it we get triggered by, that's not real freedom. Real freedom is the capacity to be anywhere, to move freely along that spectrum and be at ease anywhere in the messiness and the purity and everything in between. So this is the wisdom aspect of equanimity. And another aspect of it is the understanding of the impersonality of this whole process. So it's learning not to take our own habits and challenges and issues personally, but to understand that they're just part of being human. So another way that equanimity is often taught as a Brahmavihara practice is in relation to the understanding of karma, that our intentional actions are what create results in our lives. So if we act with wholesome, skillful intentions, by and large the outcome will tend to be positive and healthy, and the opposite also is true. Now that understanding is particularly helpful when it comes to other people because of this tendency that we've been talking about to try and fix. Even if we've managed to give up trying to control our own lives, I think many of us have people who we're close to where that agenda comes into play quite strongly. And we wish if only they would X, or if only they could understand Y, or if only they'd be a bit more Z, then we'd be happy. So some of the traditional phrases for equanimity practice are things like, I care about you, but I cannot live your life for you. Your happiness or unhappiness depends upon your actions, not upon my wishes for you. And sometimes just hearing that phrase, we might feel some little gripping of, oh, yeah, that's right. Or, no, it can't be true, because if they just... So we can notice the responses even to hearing the phrases. Do they help bring more ease or not?
Can you repeat them again?
I'll be repeating them throughout the thing, but yes, I care about you, but I cannot live your life for you. Your happiness or unhappiness depends upon your actions, not upon my wishes for you.
Well, that sounds backwards to me, because if I'm trying to fix my partner, he hasn't asked me to,
uh-huh.
And I'm saying to him, I can't live your life for you.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't want to hear me say, I can't live your life for you. I mean,
I say it
to myself.
You're saying it for yourself. Yes.
I can't live your life.
Yes, I care. You're saying it to yourself. Is that clear? So.
Got it.
You're acknowledging, I care about you, but I can't live your life for you. Makes sense? And sometimes you may say it. I mean, it depends on the circumstances. If we're in a codependent relationship of some kind, who knows? Maybe it would be appropriate to say, I care about you, but I can't live your life for you. So again, the wisdom piece is crucial here, because we could say, well, I care about you, but your life's yours, whatever. You know, that's not equanimity. So tuning in, for me, the body is a very powerful source of truth. So I learned to recognize that when I was in more of the false kind of equanimity, there was a sort of a disconnected, flat, unresponsive, a little bit dead kind of energy. When it was more genuine equanimity, there was a subtle aliveness and vibrancy and responsiveness. And it was quite refined, but it was distinct from the, yeah, whatever, kind of disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds like another way to say I release you from your pain. Kind of another, kind of a clear boundary.
Yes, although the phrase I release you from your pain, I'm not so sure about, because it implies I could even let you, I had any control over that in the first place.
Right.
So the understanding...
What was the phrase we said with the compassion? I forget how it was
May this pain release. May you know peace.
Right.
So it's impersonal. It's not I release you.
I don't own it and I'm not letting you go. Yeah.
Right. It's an aspiration rather than I will release you from your pain.
Just
to point out that it's the control piece that we're... acknowledging that we don't actually have much, as even though we may like it to have it, we don't actually have that capacity really to, we can influence other people's lives, but we can't control them. Yeah. So I was going to invite us in this next session, fairly short because I'm realizing the energy may be low, but just to touch into this as a possibility, working with someone in your life that you're close to, but perhaps might like to change in just some small or big way. Anybody not have anybody like that? If you don't, then you can just abide in equanimity. If you do, the invitation is to work with that person. We'll work with these phrases in a fairly traditional way. But it might be helpful also to keep in mind the understanding that hurt people. So in whatever ways this person's behavior may be difficult for you, connecting with the truth that hurt people. And the corollary to that is that healed people heal people. So as we heal ourselves, we're increasing this capacity to heal others. So traditionally in the sequence from the Visuddhimagga, we're going to be working now more in the terrain of the so-called difficult person, but we don't want to categorize my difficult person. It's the person you're currently having difficulties with. But it's hard for me to say that in the phrases. It's a bit of a mouthful. So I'll be just referring to this difficult person, but keep in mind the openness of that. It's just the person that you're currently having some difficulties with. Make sense? Okay.